With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to the fantastic Chris and Kira. Marie, I'm glad we've made up, even though we haven't, you know, sat down and had a good chat with them. But I'm feeling the love from Chris and Kira again, finally.
You're too trusting. They're going to ambush us now.
No, we're definitely back. We're definitely back. You'll pass them. They're actually just jumping into sleeping bags because they're back on air tomorrow at 11. So
I'll be following them on Instagram. I'm checking them out. I heard them call.
As they've been shamelessly plugging their Instagram and Twitter pages. Thanks a million, Chris and Kira. It is Friday, the 9th of April, and this is Game On.
Coming up tonight, Greg Allen has updates on Justin Rose's performance at Augusta.
How about that? What a run. Eagle, birdie, birdie. From two over to two under in three holes.
We go through all the weekend soccer with the fantastic Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan.
It's a good start by Longford. Certainly up for it. Here's Grimes. Grimes got a chance perhaps to shoot. Gets it across the area and it's snuck in. And Longford take the lead. Well, they can't say they haven't been warned.
We'll have all the latest rugby team news.
And we've the big two on the Grand National. Yes, Ruby Walsh and Jane Mangan are with us to talk us through tomorrow's big racing.
Live, love, laugh, and Patrick Mullins drawing away once again. Save something there, did Patrick. It's live, love, laugh, who's going to serve it up to them all the way and wins the Topham.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
I think we were talking a bit too long. Our music bed died, Donica.
Yeah, it did. We're getting sidetracked by Chris and Kira and our own little row with them, that they're putting us off our game. That's what they're doing.
I told you, you're being too trusting. They have an agenda. They're up to something. They probably want this slot.
That's what they're at.
They're enjoying the Monday to Friday gig and they're thinking, right, we could come in after Jenny. We could take the 6 to 7
spot. I didn't even see it coming. Well spotted, yep. Marie.
There you go. Yep. Right, there is a lot going on, Dunica, and we are going to start with the Masters because it is day two. Yesterday was dramatic and Greg Allen is on the line to tell us if day two is living up to day one. Greg?
Yeah, it is sort of. Not the same sort of drama of terror that was being wreaked around Augusta yesterday by the super quick greens. And there are some of the players talking about not having ever played greens as quick as these as they faced yesterday. There is, though, back in 2016, one particular example of greens which were unplayably fast, and that was at the Players' Championship in 2016, where I think Billy Horschel said it was like putting on dance floors. Yesterday, not quite that. The men of the Masters and the guys who organised the Masters, they tend to keep it just on the right side of playable all the time, but like to have it close to the edge. So today, there's quite a lot of very good scoring, and right at the top of the leaderboard, Justin Rose hasn't been getting involved in that very good scoring because he's three over for his round after 12. He's now tied for the lead with two other players who are really motoring today. Bernd Wiesberger, the Austrian, absolutely no form this season other than a sixth place in Dubai to speak of. And yesterday he quite famously putted the ball on the 15th green over the green into the water. That's how tricky the greens were yesterday. But today he's at seven birdies and he's just finished his round. So he has now shot a round of 66 and he is on four under par. And that looks like being a good clubhouse target. Mark Leishman, the Australian, who's a veteran of good finishes around Augusta, he's on four under par after 14. And Rose also four under par. But he's three over for his round. Now, Rose's round began poorly. He blew his tee shot on the first and he took a 3-wood off the tee, trying to be conservative, trying to find the fairway. He blew it 40 yards right of where he was aiming, into trees, ended up with a bogey there. Following that, he also made bogey on the fourth, where he went over the back of the green, took his putter, and he didn't even get the ball on the green with his putter, and did very well to make bogey on the fourth. On the sixth, he actually had one of those putts in Augusta, which is going to happen, players, once in a while, where you put the ball up a slope and then the ball doesn't reach the top of the slope and comes all the way back to his feet, which is what happened on the sixth. So that was a good bogey there because he still had to two putt from around 20 yards to get down for bogey. But on the seventh, Rose stuffed an iron shot into the ground. The ball only travelled about 120 yards, looking for it to travel about 140. Didn't reach the green, and that was almost a handicap golfer error. So very strange stuff from Rose by comparison to his imperious 65 yesterday. And that round really was extraordinary yesterday because 65 gave him a four-shot lead. And it was the second biggest first-round lead in the history of the Masters. So that's how good his round was yesterday. The opposite today, Rose 3-over after 12. But he's still tied for the lead. And I'm sure he would have taken that position starting off the week. So Wiesberger, Leishman, Rose tied at 4-under par. And they're only one stroke clear of a man who's really going well. Tony Finau has reached the turn, the American, in 31 strokes, so he's gone to 3-under par. Brian Harman is just underway, 3 holes played, he's 3-under par, and Hideki Matsuyama starts at around, just actually he's underway, literally on the first as we speak. He's also at 3-under par. But one man really going I think certainly has to be watched because I had two tips going into this. I didn't give them on this program, but I gave them on one of the podcasts that I was on. Jordan Spieth, 2-under. Cameron Smith, 2-under. I think those two guys are going to be very, very close watchers because Cameron Smith has a record around here, which over the last 12 rounds, he's before the Masters started here in 2021, he was 22-under par. And Jordan Spieth, of course, is a former Masters champion from 2015 when he made 28 birdies in 2015. So it's a really good looking leaderboard. Now, I haven't spoken about Shane Lowry, unfortunately, because of reasons of him dropping shots, but he's just made a birdie on the 12th hole, and that means that he's now back to 2-over par for the day. But his day began so badly, a double bogey on the first and a bogey on the second, and the double bogey on the first came from the middle of the fairway with a wedge in his hands, hit it over the back, chipped poorly, 3-putted from 20 feet, 3-putted the second, 3-over par for his round after two, and he's doing well at the moment to be still 3-over par after 12 holes. So, but he's now down for a tie for 37th place. So, yeah, it's exciting. But Rory McIlroy, if he wants to get in among the excitement, looks like he's going to have to shoot around in the 60s to be around even for the weekend. And he tees off at 6:45 on 4-over.
Okay, Greg, thanks so much for those updates. We'll check in with you a little bit later on. We are now going to turn our attention to football, to the League of Ireland, indeed, because St. Patrick's Athletic are hosting Derry City. There are 23 minutes gone, and Damien O'Mara is there for us. Damien.
Yeah, very entertaining game. You could probably say there's one side who are playing all the football, that's St. Pat's, but it's the other side, Derry City, who've carved out the best of the opportunities. Pat's currently standing over a set-piece routine, which we will keep an eye on. It's third in the table against the side bottom from the table, 7 points from 9. Pats have their early return. Derry yet to get a point from just 2 games played. I mentioned those early chances. The 5th minute, Jack Malone cross from the right, drilled across the box for Derry, well dealt with by the St. Pat's defence. We then had a corner routine in the 9th minute, brilliantly worked, eventually ending up at the far post where Danny Lupano headed wide, but by far the best chance of the game just a couple of minutes ago. Malone again, the danger man on the right wing for Derry City, a brilliant cutback, a brilliant ball into the box where James Atinkunde was standing by unmarked, and his header with nobody within a country mile of him went wide of the post. He will have felt that he would have done far better with that. Each of the sides making a change of piece. Atinkunde coming in for Derry in place of William Fitzgerald, who drops to the bench. That from the Derry side, beaten by Waterford last weekend. Pat's coming here off the back of a big win against Bohemians in Dalymount Park. Billy King starting tonight. Dara Burns has dropped to the bench. We're into the 26th minute by my reckoning, and it is definitely still St. Pat's 0, Derry City 0.
Damien O'Mara, thanks so much. We'll check in with you a little bit later on as well. Now, Alan Cawley joins us on the line. And Alan, we are going to stick with the League of Ireland for now. And I guess we probably do need to talk about Derry City a little bit, because we've mentioned a few times about how many games have to go by before Declan Devine is under pressure. And you would think maybe if he doesn't get the points here tonight, he will be, Alan.
I think he already is, Marie, to be honest with you. And that's coming off the back of the disappointing season that they had last year as well, finishing 7th. And they were certainly looking to improve on that. But as we've just heard in the report from Damien, they picked up no points from their first 2 games, and they went into the game tonight with Pats as huge underdogs in my view. And if they were to lose the game, I think Declan is under serious pressure, because as I say, for a club the size of Derry City to be finishing 7th last year and coming out, getting off to such a poor start this year, he's bound to be under pressure, albeit that his budget was cut at the start of the season as well, Murray. But still, when you look at the games that they played at the start of the season, away to Longford and last week at home to Waterford, they should be picking up points against either of those sides.
They really should, but the table isn't, I think, as a lot of people are expecting it. And two teams that are playing each other a little bit later on that will be on Watch LOI are Dundalk and Bowes. And somehow, 3 games into the season and there is just 2 points between them and they're down the bottom half of the table.
Yeah, not at the half of the table that we'd expect them, Marie. As you said, I had them down as maybe fighting it out for second and third behind Shamrock Rovers, and I think a lot of people would have had that as well. But as you said, they've got off to very, very disappointing starts, both the teams. I watched Bohemians last week against St. Pat's, and I was bitterly disappointed with them, Marie. Now, in fairness to Keith Long and Trevor Crawley, they've worked wonders at Bohemians over the last number of years, but when they keep losing their best players year on year and you're trying to replace that, it's very, very difficult, and it's going to catch up with you at some point. And I think this could be the year that it does catch up with them, unless they're improved drastically. Dundalk, on the other hand, obviously got beaten by Shamrock Rovers last week. The first half, I felt, they were comprehensively beaten, really. But they come out and improved in the second half, and they could have actually nicked the point only for Alamanis. But it has been a disappointing start for them as well. And I think either side tonight, I think if they're to close the gap on Shamrock Rovers or not allow Shamrock Rovers get away any further in the league, even though we're only two or three games in, I think either of these have to win tonight, and it's a huge game in Oriel Park.
It was difficult to see Brian Gartland go off so early in the game last week, and we got confirmation a couple of days ago that he has sustained a serious knee injury and he's going to be out for quite some time. And like, he's a big leader in that club, and it's people like him that they need right now.
Absolutely, Maria, and we send our best wishes to Brian. I spoke to him the night of the President's Cup, and he was really looking forward to the season kicking off and for him to suffer that injury. And it was so innocuous last week, and they happened to be just once when nobody near him, and he could just see him take whatever sort of a twist he took early in the game as well, after only a couple of minutes. And obviously that news was confirmed during the week, and it's very, very disappointing for him. Hopefully he gets back as soon as he can. I know he was kind of trying to make light of it really on Twitter with the comment that he made, that if he can get back, maybe do what Stevie O'Donnell and get back towards the end of the season and maybe for a cup final appearance if they were in it. But it's very, very disappointing for Brian. And as you said, Marie, with a lot of kind of uncertainty around Dundalk with the whole management team and the disappointing start that they've got off to a lot of new players, Brian is certainly an inspirational figure in that dressing room, and for him to be missing now, I know he'd be there to play his part in terms of the recovery, but certainly not to have him on the pitch, I think he'd be a big loss.
Now, John Kenny dropped into me yesterday and he informed me that both yourself and himself are on commentary duty for Shamrock Rovers and Sligo Rovers tomorrow. And he said to make sure and give a shout out that it is on Watch LOI, so everyone tune in. But it's actually a really interesting game, because Sligo Rovers have continued their good form from the end of last season, brought it into this season. They're equipping themselves really well. There's a good balance in the team, and they're coming up against a team, Shamrock Rovers, who they've caused trouble in the past.
Never mind Augusta, this is where it's at tomorrow. This is where it's at. The showgrounds, the battle of the Rovers, and I'll be at it. Go bananas, I will. I know, yeah, I'll be with you, okay. I'm looking forward to it. But it is a big game, you're right, Marie. It's probably the game of the weekend. Sligo Rovers have got off to a brilliant start, 7 points out of nine. There was a lot of hype and optimism around them at the start of the year, but they've backed that up with the points on the board, and I'm glad to see that. Tomorrow will be a big test for them, obviously, against Shamrock Rovers. The defending champions, obviously, in town, and the best team. We saw them last week against Dundalk, even without McInniff and Jack Byrne. They're still the best team in the league. They're the team that everyone has to beat. So I think it'll be a good gauge and a good test just to see exactly where Sligo Rovers are at. And I think they'll be competitive against Shamrock Rovers. I fancy them to maybe get a draw as well. It's going to be, I mentioned this, Marie, at the start of the season when we were previewing the league, it's going to be much more competitive this year, and it's good to see the likes of St. Pat's getting a good start, the likes of Sligo Rovers, if Dundalk or Bowes pick up as well. And as you say, some of the surprising results with the likes of Finn Harps and Longford and teams like that up there. So I do think it's going to be a lot more competitive this year, but I do think Shamrock Rovers are still the favourites, and rightly so as well.
Is Danny Mandrew, are we starting to see him as his own man, his own player, like not the replacement for Jack Byrne that he was being touted at before the season started? He's been very vocal about, and the management have, about him kind of stepping out of that shadow and doing his own thing.
Yeah, to be fair to Mandrew, Marie, I don't think he was ever kind of brought in as a replacement to Jack, because I mentioned this as well when we were previewing the season. It's very, very hard to replace a Jack Byrne or an Aaron McInniff because they're so good. It's nigh on impossible nowadays to replace them two, because they were the two best players in the league by some distance. Mandrew, in his own right, is probably the most promising and upcoming star we have in the league, and I think he'll go on to be that now in the environment that he is with Shamrock Rovers. They're pinning a lot of hopes on him to be the main man, and I was delighted to see him to get off the mark last week with a great goal against Dundalk, because I've been a fan of this boy ever since he came back into the league with Bohemians, and he has so much potential, Marie. I just hope he lives up to that. The only question mark, I think, was around his attitude, really, and I don't think he'll mind me saying that. It's public knowledge, really, in terms of just getting the best out of him. But I think the environment that he's in now with Shamrock Rovers, they'll demand a lot off him, and I think that could be good for him. And the potential that we've all seen over the last 2 or 3 years, hopefully that comes through now, obviously, with Shamrock Rovers. But I hope he has a quiet night tomorrow night, Marie, from our point of view, though, Sligo Rovers. But he is. He's a big star of the league. I think he has the potential to go back across the water, and I hope he does, because, as I say, I'm a big fan of the lad.
Yeah, quality games again tomorrow as well. Finn Harps taking on Waterford. How do you think that'll go?
Yeah, Finn Harps have been the surprise package, really, Dunagan. If some people are probably looking at maybe the start that they've had, they should go back towards the end of last season as well, because they finished the season really, really strongly. So they've carried that form into the start of the season, and they've got off to a brilliant start. They obviously, I wouldn't say they slipped up, but they picked up a point. So Paul's are winning last week, but to be on 7 points after 9 games, Ollie Horgan will be absolutely over the moon. Tough game for them against Waterford, but I fancy them to get the job done against Waterford. Waterford had a good win against Derry last week. And I watched them the week before against Sligo Rovers, and they'll do okay. Kevin Sheedy's side, it's a new team, but they're hard working, they're resilient, and it was a good victory for them. But I think Finn Harps will actually continue that winning streak that they've had at the start and get the victory against Waterford tomorrow.
Well, I actually don't know how Ollie is going to talk down his chances against Waterford, but he'll definitely try. And then the other game is Longford Town and Drogheda. And Alan, before we take a break, I just want to ask you very quickly about the women's result last night against Denmark. They came up short, but they looked like a bit of a different team. They looked like they had a little bit more of cutting edge about them and were much more on a mission.
Absolutely. I was really, really... I really enjoyed the game, Marie, but most of all, as you say, the fact that they had a cutting edge about them. They looked like, obviously, they were very well prepared. I think Vera has been brilliant since she's come in. The Kirk speaks so highly of her, the fact that she's renewed the contract and she's staying on. I think she believes as well in the players as well, and that they can go on and achieve something. I know they were lucky with qualification in the last campaign, but they certainly believe as though they can go on and achieve something with this group of players, with Vera at the helm. So I was really, really enthused by the performance. Denmark, as we all know, are a fantastic team as well. So to come out on the wrong side of a 1-0, but lots of positives to take out of it. I think it's really, really good and really promising for the girls.
A lot of positives, Alan. And she mentioned the fact that they're so coachable, you know, changing tactics at half-time, showing a bit of video analysis and then getting a rebound from it.
Yeah, I think the modern-day player, Dunican, now, they all want to be told and informed, go on the pitch, and they want clarity in the message that's been given across to them. Years ago, when we were playing, the manager would nearly just send you on the pitch, and you'd have to sometimes work it out for yourself, or you're just, we'd always be playing a rigid system. Nowadays, the modern player, they have to be so adaptable, changing formations in games. They would have, as I said, they're so well-prepped and well-prepared. Even you can see that in performances as well. So Vera obviously does her homework, does a lot of work into preparation. I think this is a good little camp for them, having the two games as well. So the fact that even though they came out on the wrong side of the result, I think there's a lot of positives to take from that game last night.
Okay, Alan, stay with us. We are going to take a very quick break and then we'll be back talking Premier League.
On-the-go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein. Game
on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we are going to continue our football chat, but we are going to turn our attention to the Premier League. We're in the company of Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan. Fergal, we've been chatting to Alan about the League of Ireland, but now it is time to talk about the Premier League. And we're going to start with United and Spurs, because it really is the biggest game of the weekend. Unfortunately, though, Fergal, I have a feeling it is not going to be a classic.
No, and I think a lot of that will come down to one of the managers, and that being Jose Mourinho. I think there's been a lot of issues that have reared their head once again in the last few weeks with Tottenham. I know we've discussed it quite a few times. They seem to be making a little bit of headway in March. That's now nosedived again. And you just get the sense with every passing week, with every result that doesn't go their way, that something's just not right. The players... the majority of them don't really seem to be massively happy with Mourinho and the way that he wants to play. And ultimately, his calling card, which is judge me by my results and where I get the team to, is not really standing him in good stead. They go into this one with just one win in the last three in the Premier League, lost the North London derby, really disappointing against Newcastle last weekend, where they let Newcastle back into the game and they were probably lucky to get a point in the end. And as it stands, when you look at the race for Europe, not just the Champions League, the race for the Europa, they're probably the team that's most likely to slip out of it.
Alan, when you mentioned modern-day players a little bit earlier on, and if you just think about modern-day managers and the performances of Spurs and Manchester United over the season so far, who do you think is a better tactician between the two managers?
That's a tricky one, Marie, because I wouldn't be Solskjaer's biggest fan, but I think if you're looking at the results so far, you'll have to say Solskjaer has come out the better because of where to sit the table. As Fergal outlined there, Spurs have only picked up one win in the last three, and they've been very miss all season. But if you were to go over Mourinho's career tactically, he's been absolutely brilliant with a lot of clubs that he's managed, and the success that he's had, and the way he set his team out, always kind of probably negative more so than positive, as we all know, but he gets the result and gets the job done. But I just think in the modern world and the game, the way the game has evolved, I'm just wondering, is Mourinho being left behind in it? Because he doesn't seem to be changing his ways whatsoever, Marie, and not alone on the pitch. You look at maybe the way he's managing things off the pitch as well, and the players certainly don't look happy. And you look at them last week, they were poor in the game, but some of his comments after the match in terms of the profile of the player that he's talking about, it, these things don't happen with a strong-minded, mentally kind of player that I'm used to, almost, he was alluding to. I don't think that sits well with players in the dressing room nowadays, and he just can't get away with it. And I think that's, we're seeing a result of that then in terms of the performances and the results of what we're seeing, and that's why it's so inconsistent. And I never was a fan of Mourinho taking over Spurs anyway. I didn't think it would go well, Marie, and I know it's easy to say that now after the event, but I think it's only a matter of time before he moves on.
Fergal, I saw him described a little bit earlier as a professional thorn in the side, Jose Mourinho. So he is up against his former club, and he is able to pull a rabbit out of the hat every now and again if it suits his own agenda. Like, is there any possibility, do you think, that he could do something special?
I mean, there's always that possibility. He always does have that little smirk on his face and the little glint in his eye. And as Alan rightly says, you look at his record over the years, he does have form for results when things are not going his way and when things seem to be negative. And he's brilliant at creating that type of siege mentality to get the players pulling in his direction. But I do think we're seeing a very different Jose Mourinho now than we did 3, 4, 5 and even further seasons back. No, I don't see it going his way this weekend, because I don't think we're facing the Mourinho that we have in the past. And when you look at his numbers, and in and around the same kind of time that he was at Chelsea or at United or other clubs that he's had great success, his win percentage is way down in comparison. And I don't think he's finished as a manager. I still think he's an excellent manager. He's still got a fantastic CV. But as Alan points out, maybe the direction the game has moved in, maybe he hasn't reacted enough, maybe he's not quite as sharp in certain areas. He's very stubborn, and he'll stick with his decisions and what he says goes. He's not as flexible as other coaches might be. And form going into this one, United have the edge. And I think just the positive mood around United at the minute, they know they're probably okay for Champions League football next season. They were good against Granada last night to win that game. They're probably going to get into Europa League semi and maybe a final. When you look at the direction the two teams and the two clubs are moving in, it's all positive for United.
Alan, just on that bounce, as Fergal said, a good win last night, and coming into this game now, do you think we could see them expressing themselves a little bit more, Man United, and them to be dangerous? And, you know, this is the part of the season where we're used to them being really selfish and picking up silverware. They mightn't get it in the league, but Europa League is certainly on the cards.
Absolutely. They played very well last night, and Granada were quite organised, but they were actually very dirty. It was almost like a throwback. I was glad to see it nearly that. I actually saw tackles and fellas going about it like that. It really mattered to them, albeit that they were quite on the edge. But it was a good performance from United. They got the victory 2-0. I think the goal right at the end just makes it a little bit more comfortable for them, and they should come through. They will come through. But you look at the league form and United sitting second, I think it's important that finish second, because everybody's going to look at Solskjaer come the end of the season and think his progress be made, and it'll be a much easier argument if he's able to say, yeah, look, we finished in second and we won the Europa League, for argument's sake. I think it's important that he gets a trophy as well, Donica, because we even saw that with Arteta last year, that it does buy you time. I know Arteta was only in the door, but you look at how bad Arsenal have been this year, but people will still go back to the fact that he won a trophy, so that does buy you time. And Solskjaer will be fine in terms of he'll be there for next year. There's no question about that. But I think it is important that he does finish second in the table. And I think you look at the game on Sunday, the one area that we always speak about with Mourinho over the years is defensively how good and how solid his teams are. It's anything but with Spurs. And I think you look at the likes of Rashford, Greenwood, if James plays, even Cavani came on last night, they'll fancy their chances of getting goals at the weekend, because the defensive issues that Spurs have has been a major problem all season.
Another interesting one, and it could probably actually potentially be a much better game, really, when you think about it, is the clash of West Ham and Leicester City, just because they've both been pretty evenly matched, really, in that race for the top four. But a West Ham without Declan Rice coming up against a good Leicester City, it's really hard to see West Ham been able to win that one. Fergal, sorry.
Yeah, no. I think when you, as you say, when you look at form, it's hard to pick between the two of them, because West Ham, we didn't really expect them to be in the race for top four. Leicester, based on the way they've been since the start of the season, we've kind of got used to them being there, but they haven't really done enough to kind of just sign off and say, yeah, we're going to be playing Champions League football next season. And I think, just like United, Spurs, and just like one or two other games this weekend, this could essentially decide who will be playing Champions League football, or who will even be playing European football next season. And you just think that with no Rice for West Ham, no Mikel Antonio as well, that's a big one. He's been massively important to them this season. Leicester have kind of got over the hump of their injuries, and the defeat to Manchester City last time out, I think they'll just bounce off from that, because you know, everyone's kind of used to losing to Manchester City, unless you're a Manchester United fan at the moment. And I think I still fancy Leicester to be okay for top four, and West Ham fans won't thank me for kind of a little bit of a pat on the head, but they don't expect themselves to be where they are. If they can continue and stay in the race for Europa, that'll be a massive achievement when you think of where they were at the start of the season and where they were planning to be come the end of the campaign.
Alan, they won't think like that though. When they're in the top four now, they'll try to stay there, but there is some big clubs behind them, and you know, tomorrow is a chance to push up the league.
No, I was interested in Moyes' comments the other night before the Wolves game, because he's actually enjoying it, Dunica, and that's the way they should embrace it, because anything they achieve from here on in now is a complete and utter surprise, and it's a bonus, because nobody, as Fergal said, expected them to be in the position that they're in. They've had an unbelievable season. Now the fact to find themselves in that position with, what, 8 games to go, they should absolutely embrace it and go all out to get it. And I think they will, to be fair. Lingard has added an injection into the team, and not only on the pitch, I think off the pitch as well. He seems like a really lively personality around the place, so that's added a huge injection into them as well. The only area that I would, a little bit of concern for them, and Fergal also mentioned it, no Rice. Rice is as good as there is around Donegal. Rice, Declan Rice is going to be an absolute superstar, and I don't think, now Moyes mentioned he thinks that they will hold on to him come the end of the season. I'd be surprised if they hold on to him, because all the clubs will be queuing up for Declan Rice. He's a brilliant player, and the fact that he could be missing for the next 5 or 6 weeks, that could dent the chance to finish in the top four. But I still think they've had a brilliant season, and they should go all out to try and achieve that. Whether they'll get it, I don't think so. But I do think it's between them and Chelsea. I'd rule out Spurs, I'd rule out Liverpool, and I think it's between them and Chelsea to get the top four, the last spot for the top four.
Well, Chelsea are taking on Crystal Palace, and no doubt will probably be a little bit apprehensive after what happened against West Brom last weekend. But Fergal, Dunica mentioned that there are some big clubs, some other big clubs as well, who are coming up behind them. And Liverpool are taking on Aston Villa on Saturday, and it should be straightforward enough, but it's always really hard to bounce back after a pretty devastating European loss.
Yeah, and I think mentality, that's what Klopp will be focusing on here. The positive 3-0 win over Arsenal to then go to Madrid and lose and not really get out of second gear in terms of their performance, and then now be looking at banking on an Anfield comeback next week. It takes a lot out of his players mentally, and we know the issues that Liverpool have had with injuries throughout the whole season. I think this is an interesting one, because like the situation with Leicester and West Ham and other games this weekend, if Liverpool do win, that could probably knock Aston Villa out of the race to get into the Europa, and that's a strong statement to make, to say, right, that's one rival ticked off, we can now focus on reeling in Tottenham and Chelsea. And I think it is a difficult one for Klopp to manage, but in an odd way, he now knows that the injury picture is not going to change between now and the end of the season. He knows what's ahead of him in terms of the players that he can pick and the games that are to come. I wouldn't be surprised if one or two players are rested against Villa, not in a disrespectful way to Villa that Klopp thinks the game is won, but he knows that if they've got any chance of pulling it back against Madrid, he needs to have certain key players fresh for that one. So I would fancy Liverpool to win this one, and that'll probably be the end of the road for Villa pushing to get into Europe. But as for what will happen against Madrid next week, it's a big ask, and I don't think, based on the way Liverpool's season has gone, they're able to spread themselves thin enough to keep in two competitions.
Yeah, Alan, just on that point, Aston Villa without Jack Grealish, he's out for another 2 weeks with that injury setback. A player like that, you'd need him for a big game like this.
Huge blow, but I think sadly for Marie and all the other Liverpool fans, it tells you exactly where Liverpool were at this year right now, that Fergal is saying if they beat Villa it'll be a statement that rules about the Europa League. But we thought Liverpool,
no, you're not in the studio, Colly, you know that.
but we thought they'd be going toe to toe with Man City this year to win the league. So it just tells you obviously the dreadful season that they've had. We all know the factors, and I'd be the first to defend them in terms of the injuries, but I still don't think they should be down where they are. And I thought the performance during the week was absolutely dreadful, albeit Madrid played well, Real Madrid, but I thought a lot of the focus was on the fact that how bad Liverpool were. But I thought Real Madrid played really well, but just the defensive issues again. Phillips kept back, Davis won't at that level, I'm afraid, and that's obviously why they're down languishing where they are, Liverpool. But I think Villa will cause them problems even without Grealish. You look forward players to have Watkins, Traore, El Ghazi, Trezeguet. I think they'll look at that Liverpool back four, especially you look at as well the home form is dreadful at the moment and they've been so inconsistent. And in terms of the Champions League, I think the tie is over. I can't see them turning around. I know people will go back to
okay, just stop now, Alan.
Keep going till you get tears going.
But Marie, there's not a hope in hell. I'm on a roll now.
I know, I can sense that. Just a very quick update. It is half time between Pats and Derry, and it is nil all there. Okay, thanks so much to Fergal, and I suppose I better say thanks to Alan as well, even though he did go on a little bit of a rant there at the end. We will check in with you next week. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to look at the Leinster team with Donegal.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
At Centra, we have everything you need with great offers. Like Centra Fresh Irish Whole Chicken 1.9 kilo, only €5. Dorito Sharing Bag Range 150 gram, €2 each. And until Sunday, Coors Light 20 bottle box, only €20. Centra, live every day. Enjoy alcohol sensibly.
Get super spring deals on technology at Harvey Norman. Like the stylish Samsung Galaxy Tab A 8-inch tablet. Now only €129, save €40. Or get the Fitbit Sense smartwatch with tools for stress management, skin temperature, built-in GPS and more. Now only €299. And at Harvey Norman, we're matching all competitors' prices, even their sale prices. For more super spring deals, shop online at harveynorman.ie or safely in our spacious stores. Open until 6 p.m. daily for home appliances and essential technology.
Go! Game on 2FM.
Now, as if we didn't have enough to be looking forward to this weekend, Donegal, we also have some massive rugby games, and I think the Exeter Chiefs and Leinster will probably be one of the best we'll have seen in a while.
Yeah, it's worthy to be a final, Marie, and it's a quarter-final at this point, so there is incredible excitement about it. It's a magic weekend of rugby, though. It really is, and it kicks off tonight with London Irish versus Bath. But the big one really is our Women's Six Nations. That goes on tomorrow. It's on 5 o'clock, and you can catch it on RT2. But it's a bit of unfortunate that the Leicester and Exeter game clashes with that, but it's quite simple. You just put on Michael Corcoran on the radio and you can hear the Leinster match while you're watching the girls playing. So it's a simple way about going about it. Looking through, you know, I know we mentioned it last night and we went through it with Fiona Hayes and Stephen Ferris, but I'm really excited about this Irish team. I look at our back row and it's just work rate throughout. I look at our back three and it's dangerous. But the only thing I'm fearful, Marie, is I know Adam Griggs is going on about having 20 training camps, but we said that as well in a World Cup in 07. And we were never fitter, we were never more prepared. There's nothing like playing games, and I think unfortunately for our girls in green, they haven't played an awful lot of matches, so I think it's going to be a big challenge on tomorrow against Wales, but hopefully we're good enough to get across the line, and I think that should set us up for what hopefully is a brilliant weekend of sport. Like you said, the Leinster team was named today. There's one change. Scott Fardy comes in for Ryan Beard, and you can can see why Leo Cullen's done that when you see the Exeter Chiefs team. They named a really experienced pack. They've made two changes to their team, bringing in Thomas Francis, the Welsh international, and Ben Moons. So you know where they're coming. It's going to be a battle up front a little bit as well. Exeter have added to their game. Everyone knows when they get into your 22, they'll just grind and find a way to get over the line. But I was really impressed with them last week against Leon. They're able to put two passes on it now. And look, I think they got a wake-up call playing against Leinster earlier on. And, you know, Rob Baxter would say it. He needed some X-factor players, and he certainly has them now. So I think it's going to be an incredible game. It's just going to be brilliant to watch. I'll be honest, we need Leinster to come out on top, though. And I know we spoke about Pro 14 rugby, but I wouldn't be too worried about the rest of them. Just for Irish rugby, we need people at the top table. We need standard setters. And to be fair, that's been Leinster over the last while.
Yeah, it's been really interesting just listening to Rob Baxter, though, in the lead up to this game, and just how open and honest he has been about how he feels about Leinster. And even we spoke about it a little bit last night, how there's no fear there. But he studied them so much, and he said that, you know, that when he was trying to figure out ways to play the game, ways that he could improve as a coach and get his team to improve, that Leinster were the team that he was looking at.
I couldn't be more impressed with Rob Baxter, I'll be completely honest with you. We had to go to a Gallagher's Premiership launch. I had to go with Gary Gold, who was our DOR. I was club captain in Munster. And I remember just seeing him. There was a kind of break in play, and he was watching Super 15's rugby on his phone and taking notes. And you know these people, Marie, that just absolutely love it, and they're constantly learning and finding ways to evolve and get better. And he's certainly one of those guys, you know. And I think there's been a little bit of a loving, and it's kind of annoying me. They're all throwing bouquets at each other. There will be fireworks tomorrow. Don't be fooled by Leo going, oh, Rob's great, and Rob going. They're both hungry for success. Exeter would kind of feel that, you know, they've been held back with everything that went on with Saracens for a number of years. You know, the ones right behind them and clipping at their heels has always been Exeter, and they would feel they'd need to have more silverware. But I think they certainly have. They have dangerous players, the likes of Slade, Woodburn, Stuart Hogg, who people, you know, I think it looks like you're nailed on 15. And I know everyone will say we need to give guys like Ryan Beard a chance, but I can see when you're playing Johnny Gray and Johnny Hill, you need experience as Scott Fardy. That guy's a dog. He'll find a way to win. And I mean that in the most respectful way as possible, but you want to play with guys like that. So that should be an incredible game. There is loads more brilliant matches.
What about the fact that, okay, they had the week off, which is great, you're rested, but at the same time, when you have a week off and a team has played and they're at that level of intensity, would you prefer to be on a team that had a game the week before and kind of are very confident about how sharp you are, or the team that would have had a rest?
Yeah, I'd rather be on it. I'd rather be in Exeter, but that's because they're trying to get people back into their squad. Like we mentioned, Thomas Francis coming back into the side. He's just come back from Welsh camp. Stuart Hogg's just coming back from Scottish camp. The thing, I've no fear of our internationals, Robbie Henshaw's, the Johnny Sextons, the likes of, you know what I mean, Keane Healy, because they're at the level at the moment. But the step up, and they're players that probably is your club players that always, to be fair, play well, but you would feel for the likes of Dave Kearney, James Lowe comes in, Ronan Lochney, that needs to be big games. So they're the guys that probably need a bit of game time. But I think overall, in the main, from a Leinster point of view, the week to freshen up will be more and more important. They're players that are used to getting up to those high levels, and I think it should be an incredible game. But it's an incredible weekend of it. It really is. Like Ron O'Gara's La Rochelle taking on Sale. We mentioned this game, but like if you're just into rugby, watching Leicester taking on Newcastle, you know, there's, you know, coaching setups and stuff like that. There's grudge, there's niggle, there's nastiness to that match, and Sunday's an all French affair. Obviously Simon Zeebo's out injured, but Donegh Ryan starts for Racing as they take on Bordeaux. So it's going to be an incredible weekend. So
for you, game of the weekend?
I do you know what? It is Exeter versus Leinster. I don't think La Rochelle are getting the credit they deserve. I know everyone's cheering on Ronan O'Gara, and isn't it great? And everyone loves that little story. He's like the lovable little puppy that everyone's there. Oh, look, Ronan O'Gara can actually coach. That's really interesting. Whereas they're not seeing this beast of a team, and I think they could blindside everyone and do really well in the competition. But if you're a purist, you love the game. Clermont versus Toulouse on Sunday will be blockbuster. I cannot wait to watch it. So hopefully our girls in green get us off to a flying start against Wales, which is on order T2 at 5 o'clock, and hopefully we have a brilliant weekend of it, Marie.
I'm sure we will. Okay, very quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, Donica, it's probably been about 2 years, coming up to 2 years since we started this show, and we've been looking at Ruby Walsh for quite a long time now, and I've seen him crack a few smiles. Well, today was the first time that I ever saw him jump up and down, fist pump, click his fingers. I couldn't hear the sound, but I reckon he was roaring and shouting and smiling and laughing, and that was because Live, Love, Laugh won the Topham Handicap Chase with Patrick Mullins aboard, and I'm delighted to say both Ruby and Patrick and Jane Mangan are all with us. Ruby, to you first. You were happy?
I was, Jen. I was delighted, and I was delighted for the man that's going to join us on the line as well. I thought for him to ride a horse at 11 stone around entry in a postage stamp of a saddle, and to have the confidence he had from the third last to the last fence to slow the whole thing down and wait for everybody else, I thought it was brilliant to watch, Jen.
Marie. Your memory's gone as well.
I'm struggling with people's names all week. I have to call on Ed Chamberlain, Matt Chapman and Ollie Bell. I'm fine with horses, but I just can't seem to figure the people out at all.
Well, Patrick Mullins is with us. Patrick, this is what I reckon. I reckon Ruby is actually always that happy, and it's just an act when he's in front of the screen. What do you think?
He's not as stony-faced as he lets on.
Look, it was a brilliant race for you today anyway. And you just dominated throughout. Ruby will have more information on it and better questions than I will, but it was just really enjoyable to watch. Ruby enjoyed it. Everybody who was commentating on enjoyed it. And it was, as you said in the interview afterwards, it was like being a child. It was that kind of a performance from the horse, and you were just so happy that you were able to enjoy it.
It was. I mean, any jockey, you want to ride over the Grand National fences. And, you know, I remember being very young and writing or reading an old book with really small print and a dusty cover about the National, and it has a magic about it, those fences, but that course, and you always see a horse that takes a track like that, and you always wonder what must that feel like, and I just feel so lucky to have been able to experience it.
And you made Ruby very happy.
But I have better news for you, Patrick, because I think you're going to have the same experience again tomorrow. I've always thought Live, Love, Laugh was made for entry. I think Borough Saint is the very same. Now, for people listening in, you're 11 stone today. You have 10, 13 tomorrow. You're not exactly small. What are you going to eat between now and tomorrow morning? Or tomorrow evening, even?
it's light for me. I'm going back. We're all staying in a hotel. The Irish are all staying in one hotel in Haydock. So I brought over my own little bag of rice, and I have a little can of tuna, and that seems to work for me. So I'll have that tonight, and I have my own porridge as well. We'll have a small little bowl of porridge in the morning, and that'll do me. But to be honest, after today, I don't need anything. I'm on cloud nine, to be quite honest.
And you're looking forward to Borough Saint. Look, I won the Irish National in 2019. I think he's made for the race. He's low style of jumping. I wouldn't. That's a lie. But you must be looking forward to riding him.
I can't wait. Look, like I said, the Grand National entry, to ride in it, I never thought I'd get to ride a horse at a live champion. I thought I might get to ride something with too much weight that, you know, you or Paul wouldn't want to ride, or something that's an older horse. This is a horse, he just has enough weight for me. He's 8 years old. It was probably a blessing that the race was called off last year, because he would have been seven, and I think no seven-year-old has won since Dunkirk was evacuated in World War II, so that was a blessing in disguise. And, for me to get a seat in a saddle on a horse with a live chance, it doesn't get any better than this.
Ruby, you obviously know this horse really well, and a lot has happened to get Patrick into this situation, but from listening to you and listening to him, it almost feels like it could be the right horse, the right man, the right day, and all coming together at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how big a believer I am in faith, but I think when the BHA made a decision that they were following the COVID protocols to the letter of the law, and the amateur jockeys therefore then couldn't ride at the Cheltenham Festival, it was a blow to Patrick and to Derek O'Connor, Jamie Codd and every amateur, and they've gotten back for entry. Paul Townend got injured in Ferry House last Sunday, which is very disappointing and hard on him. But you start to think, is something written in the stars for someone like Patrick? Get back, get the ride on a horse with a big chance in the Grand National. And I don't know, but I just think it could happen.
Patrick, you're all on the one team, and Ruby said that today after Live, Love, Laugh won. Do you go and ask him now for advice because he knows Borough Saints so well, or do you just go and do your own thing?
No, I'll be talking to Ruby later about him, but those races over the national fences, I think they're probably they're type of race you can't plan too much for. You might have a plan that you want to go really forward, you want to be in or out or in the middle or drop out, but with those 40 horses, 30 fences, the fences are, they're not jumped anywhere else, so much changes. So you have a loose plan of what you need, but I've ridden the horse the last two mornings out in Haydock, and I've talked to Dermot Keeling riding out of home, and you know, you get everyone's opinion, but plans change the minute the tapes go up in the National, you know.
And how are you feeling about the lack of crowds?
I didn't even notice that there was no crowd today.
Because Ruby was so loud.
I'm just delighted to be here. Like I said, we missed Cheltenham, and that was, I really hated watching it because obviously, like you said, we're on the same team and I was cheering on our horses, but in your heart and soul, you don't cheer on a horse that you're missing the ride on. And like, you know, obviously Paul has wished me luck and everything, but I know he's not going to be really wishing that Borough Saint wins, and it's tough on him, and that's what happens with jockeys. You know, sometimes you can't ride horses, and Cheltenham was a disgusting experience, so it's great to be back at it over here now. Yeah,
well, congratulations on today, and we wish you the very best of luck tomorrow. We'll be shouting for you here on Game On anyway. Patrick, thanks a million. We're going to keep on Ruby and Jane though and just have a chat about the rest of the races that were on today, and Jane Mangan joins us now. Jane, it was Fakhar Dudaree's day really today, and Joseph O'Brien in that Grade 1 March chase.
It was. He really stamped his class in the race. But I was also delighted for Kevin Sexton and Peter Fahey to land their first Grade 1 with Belfast Banter as well. Look, we don't have the same amount of numerical horses going to Aintree this year, but we've already had 6 winners over 2 days, which is pretty impressive when you consider the few runners that we've had. And now we have 18 contenders for the main event. Willie Mullins has a number of them. JP McManus is well represented with 7. But there's a lot of horses with 40 lining up. Hard to put a line through any of them with any great confidence.
It is, and we'll get to that in a second. But Ruby, first, I just want to ask you about Sam Twist and Davis today, and managing to stay on that horse. How difficult was that?
Oh, it was a great act, Marie. It was incredible reactions and agility. And when you slow it down and watch it, as he's going with his left hand, he catches the left rein and catches the horse on the mouth, and that stalls his fall. And by stalling his body weight for a couple of hundredths of a second, he was able to then get his left elbow onto the horse's neck, and that kept him on. Now, there's times you get lucky, and that looks so dramatic, and he managed to get himself back in, but it was only because he got tension on the left rein. And look, you saw Rachel Blackmore yesterday, you saw Sam Twist and Davis today. Sometimes it goes for you, sometimes it goes against you, but I think that was something Sam could be proud of.
It really was. And Jane mentioned Peter Fahey and Kevin Sexton. You're obviously over there, and Kevin just seemed like he was so happy on cloud 9. It was just seemed like such a big moment for him on Belfast Banter.
A huge moment for him. I mean, he's had a few bumps in the road in his career. He was in exceptional conditional. Things stopped for him, and you know, he's gotten over that and moved forward, and he's come back and won the county hurdle on Belfast Banter, and then he moved on to today to a Grade 1, which is up another level again, Marie. You're at the top table, and he was very cool on him. I know he said afterwards he thought he went too soon, but when you watched it from the overhead, camera that ITV have working in Aintree, you could see that he had to take the options as they presented themselves. He put himself into a race winning position, a bit like Patrick in the Topham chase, when Patrick sat from the Melling Road all the way to the last hurdle. Kevin Sexton, when he got to the front, he didn't commit. He had the confidence to stay sitting there. And that's the beauty of watching a lot of the Irish riders ride. How confident they are, how tactical they are, and how often they make the right decisions.
Well, it has been a really enjoyable couple of days, but Jane, tomorrow really is the big day. So, a big field. Hit us. Who should we be looking out for?
Yeah, hit us with a few. I must say, before we start, we have Monty's Pass here outside the back door, and he is the oldest living national horse. Ordinarily, the national winners go and parade at Aintree, but because he's 28 now, it just wouldn't be a safe thing to do to travel him over. So it is great to still have him here. He won the national for us back in 2003. And I know, look, I'm a little bit superstitious, so I'm going to take a little bit of superstition off Ruby so he doesn't have to pump up his dad's horse any second now, because I know what that's like and you don't want to jinx him. But he has all the right credentials. Not many of these horses would have the class or the pace to win a grade two over 2 miles in their prep run for a national. We know he stays because he won the Kim Muir back in 2019 with Derek O'Connor. I think this obviously has been the plan for not one season, not two seasons, probably three. And he is a leading contender for Mark Walsh. And, you know, Ted won it with Papillon. He's had a similar preparation to that of Seabass when he finished third with Katie in 2011. And I think he ticks a lot of boxes. Must mention Farclaw for Jack Kennedy and Jigginstown. He was second when we last saw him. And I think he placed behind, at Leopardstown, he placed behind a horse called Live, Love, Laugh. And that form is working out quite well. The horse he finished fourth. The horse finished second that day is Manila Times. Wouldn't that be quite a story with Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore teaming up there? No woman has ever ridden the winner of the Aintree Grand National. It is only a matter of time. But they're just a few names I'm thinking of. I'm wondering what's Ruby going for.
Yeah, Ruby, throw it to you. Like, obviously, Jane said it there, you can't really talk up Ted's horse, but what would you be nervous in the field for him?
Oh, I can. Don't worry. It wouldn't bother me. But Marie or Jane has already mentioned them, so I'll keep moving. Discorama of Paul Nolan and Stephanie has a chance. He's into 16-1 now. He was as big as 33s last week, but Brian Cooper rides him. You also have Annabelle Fly for Tony Martin, Dennis O'Regan, Acapella Bourgeois for Danny Mullins and Willie Mullins. Now, Acapella Bourgeois beat Borough Saint in his last run in the Bobby Joe Chase. Jamie Codd rides Milan Native for Denise Foster. He's going to do 10-6 on Milan Native. That's incredibly light for Jamie Codd. Kevin Sexton, who had such a big day today, rides Shattered Love for Denise Foster as well. And Brian Hayes rides Class Conti. As Jane said, there's so many Irish horses in here with a chance. Darrow O'Keefe from Chris's Dream. When I grew up, Irish horses didn't win Grand Nationals. I will not be surprised if we win another tomorrow. I think the Irish horse are just so strong at the moment that it's incredible.
Okay, Jane Ruby, thanks so much for that, and thanks for everything this week. We will chat to you next week, and you too, Jane. Enjoy tomorrow. It is set to be a great day of racing and a great day of sport and a great day of golf too, hopefully anyway, Greg Allen.
Yeah, I think Shane Lowry's shown a little bit of real teeth over the last half an hour or so. He's birdied the 12th and 13th. He's got himself back to one over par after 15. So he's now inside the top 30, and just so long as he negotiates the last three holes, and there's water on the 16th, but otherwise it's all land between here and the 18th. He should be around for the weekend. The cut looks like falling at three or four over par. And after that terrible start, you know, he was three over par after two holes. This fight back by Lowry is pretty good, because scoring isn't that great today. It's still six under par now that's leading. Justin Rose has birdied the 14th and also the 13th before that. So he had a bad start playing alongside Lowry. So he was three over par for his front nine. But Rose is now one over for the day. But he's the outright leader again on six under par. One stroke clear of the Australian Mark Leishman, who's just finished with a round of 67. So Leishman, five under, one behind Rose. Bernd Wiesberger, the 35-year-old Austrian, six times he's made the cut in the Masters, never a top 20 finisher. And here he is tied for third after a 66. That's the best round of the day. So he's tied for third, Bernd Wiesberger, on four under par, two off the lead, alongside Brian Harman and Tony Finau, who's making a real run, five 5 under par for his first 12 holes, and he's very much in contention. The man who's only got one PGA Tour win to his name, but is a real, real talent. Tony Finau is 3 off the lead on 3 under par. And as I said as well earlier in the programme, Rory McIlroy, he's just actually teed off. He's playing the first as we speak. On 4 over par, it does look as though he's going to have to shoot a round of at least 72, possibly 73, but to be sure of making the cut, a subpar round will do it for him. But he needs to play an awful lot better than he did yesterday.
And Greg, I don't know if you've got to see any of him, but body language can often tell a lot early on.
No, I haven't seen him yet, unfortunately. That's the way the pictures run here. But Rory, the body language yesterday was, I think, typified by the 6-iron when he put the ball into the water on the 13th, and he really had that look of someone who looked a bit lost. He needs to find something today, there's no doubt about it. This new arrangement with coach Pete Cowan looks like it's a long-term fix, not a short-term fix from what we saw yesterday.
Okay, Greg, well, enjoy the rest of the weekend and we will chat to you next week. Donica, that is all we have time for. I know you're excited about such a busy weekend of sport. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it should be great. I think you need 2 screens, a few phones. You need everything charged up.
And snacks.
A massive thank you to Laura Lee and Andrew O'Connor. The brilliant Blonde Tracy's up next with the official chart show. We're back Monday at 6.